So, all glories to the holy name. And let's hear something from the Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, since we started on this. And the middle three chapters, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, are the jewel of the Bhagavad Gita, which is speaking about bhakti. So, just like you keep a jewel in a safe place, in the middle, you know, packed in the middle. So similarly, this jewel of bhakti is in the middle six chapters. Or sometimes he compares it to the king coming through town, that in the front you have military, and then you have the bands, and then the king's in the middle. He's not at the front, he's in the middle. And then in the back there's more jugglers and band players and retinue, and then there's military in the back. So Bhagavad Gita is packaged like that. So we're in the middle six chapters. Chapter 9 is very much about bhakti. And last week we read the verse 1. And what is one of the main themes of verse 1 that we talked about last week and that's in the verse itself? Attitude. Yeah, we talked about attitude last week. And what is a specific theme, well, word or attitude in this verse that one must be freed from, also mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in order to understand the science of Krishna? This could be called a state of heart. Starts with an E. Yes, envy. What is envy? It's the inability to tolerate others' success. If you can't tolerate others being successful around you, doing better than you, then this is envy. It's one definition of envy Prabhupada gave. So the opposite side, if we become engladdened when we see other people successful and doing well, then we're becoming free from envy. And that's very much necessary to enter into this chapter. If you have a friend or something that you're not envious of, and you start hearing all about the wonderful things he did, like you know, a mother or father, they're not envious of their child. They're eager to hear of all his glories, right? There's nothing blocking them. But maybe somebody else who's envious, who's thinking, oh, please don't let it out that he's so great, because then I'll look worse. This is a kind of envy. So when Krishna is speaking about himself, coming through the Bhagavad Gita, through these sections of the Bhagavad Gita, talking about how great he is, if someone's a little bit envious, and we can see in a practical way, sometimes people look at the Bhagavad Gita, and you know, I've had it before. I remember in Santa Cruz, different kinds of envy manifest. Somebody looked at the Bhagavad Gita and he said, "Where's the verses?" And I said, "Here." And he goes, "What's all this other writing?" And I said, "That's commentary given by, you know, by the author and by the great acharya sages and things like that." And he said, "No, I don't want to hear what they have to say. I just want the verses." Who cares what they have to say? And then other people I've had, you know, when they look in, they'll think, you know, they'll look at the book. This one's happened a million times. You're distributing books, and somebody takes the book, and they're looking at it, and you're telling them all this thing. You know, book shows you how to be in harmony with nature, and, you know, book on peace of mind. And then they zero in, and they go, "What's this divine grace? What's his divine grace doing here?" And then you start to see, it's like, wait a minute, I don't want anybody who's a divine grace. You know, this feeling of envy comes up. And what to speak of, you know, Krishna starts talking about how great he is, and, you know, the demons start, it's like, wait a minute, you know, they don't want to hear that. They become envious of Krishna. So the devotees, they're not envious of Krishna. They love Krishna. They want to hear more and more about how great he is. The more they can hear about his glories and his greatness, the more they become happy. So this is the only qualification for advancing in spiritual life, is to be free from envy. Because if you're free from envy, then it all goes in. You don't block it. I block it myself if I'm envious. I don't want to hear it that somebody else is better than I am. So I can't actually take advantage of their association, either. If I'm thinking, I wish they weren't so great, then I can't take advantage. My heart closes. I become a miser and I don't take it in. But if I'm thinking how great they are and my heart opens with happiness, then all of their greatness goes in my heart. And I become great. This is called grinanti. It's the principle of grinanti, that if you're non-envious and you appreciate others' service, others' qualities, then you you also become like that. And if you're envious, then you can't appreciate Krishna's qualities. You can't appreciate the qualities of the devotees. Your heart closes up. No, I don't want to hear that. So Krishna says in the very beginning of this chapter, somebody who's non-envious and listens to what I'm about to say will become the greatest person. They'll know everything. They'll become fully qualified because of this. All auspiciousness will enter their lives just by hearing it with a non-envious heart. So envy is the great enemy of the conditioned soul. Anything else you remember from last week? Attitude is everything. Free from envy. Anasuyave. Okay, let's hear the next verse. Next verse is a famous verse, and it has various parts to it. Gora, are you listening back there? This is a big verse. You probably remember this from before. Okay. Raja Vijaraja Kuyam. Please. Pavitram Idamuttamam. Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam. Susukham Kartum Avyayam. Raja Vijaraja Kuyam. Pavitram idam uttamam. Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam. Susukham kartum avyayam. Raja vidya raja guyam. Pavitramidam uttamam. Pratyakshavagamam dhamyam. Sutsukam kartum avyayam. Raja vidya raja kuyam. Pavitram idam uttamam. Pratyakshavagamam dhamyam. Susukam kartum avyayam. Raja vidya raja kuyam. Raja vidya raja kuyam. Pavitram idam uttamam. Pavitram idam uttamam. Pratyakshavagamam dhamyam. Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam. Susukam kartum avyayam. Susukam kartum avyayam. Avyayam. Rajavidya. The king of education. Rajakuhyam. The king of confidential knowledge. Pavitram. The purest. Idam. This. Uttamam. Transcendental. Pratyaksha. By direct experience. Avagamam. Understood. Dharmyam. The principle of religion. Susukham. Very happy. Kartum. To execute. Avyayam. Everlasting. Raja vidya raja guyam.
pavitramidam uttamam pratyaksha bhagamam dhamyam susukam kartum avyayam rajavidya rajakuyam pavitam nidam uttamam pratyaksha bhagamam dhamyam susukam kartum avyayam.
This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. Okay. Srila Prabhupada's purport. This chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called the King of Education because it is the essence of all doctrines and philosophies explained before. Among the principal philosophers in India are Gautama, Kanada, Kapila, Yajnavalkya, Shandilya, and Vaishvanara. And finally, there's Vyasadeva, the author of the Vedanta Sutra. So there's no dearth of knowledge in the field of philosophy or transcendental knowledge. Now the Lord says in this ninth chapter, now the Lord says that this ninth chapter is the king of all such knowledge. The essence of all knowledge that can be derived from the study of the Vedas and different kinds of philosophy. It is the most confidential because confidential or transcendental knowledge involves understanding the difference between the soul and the body. And the king of all confidential knowledge culminates in devotional service. Generally, people are not educated in this confidential knowledge. They are educated in external knowledge. As far as ordinary education is concerned, people are involved with so many departments: politics, sociology, physics, chemistry, mathematics, astronomy, engineering, etc. There are so many departments of knowledge all over the world and many huge universities, but there is, unfortunately, no university or educational institution where the science of the spirit soul is instructed. Yet the soul is the most important part of the body. Without the presence of the soul, the body has no value. Still, people are placing great stress on the bodily necessities of life, not caring for the vital soul. The Bhagavad Gita, especially from the second chapter on, stresses the importance of the soul. In the very beginning, the Lord says that this body is perishable and that the soul is not perishable. Antavanta ime deha nityasyokta sharirinaha. That is a confidential part of knowledge. Simply knowing that the spirit soul is different from this body and that its nature is immutable, indestructible, and eternal. But that gives no positive information about the soul. Sometimes people are under the impression that the soul is different from the body and that when the body is finished, one is liberated from the body. The soul remains in a void and becomes impersonal. But actually, that is not a fact. How can the soul, which is so active within the body, be inactive after being liberated from the body? It is always active. If it is eternal, then it is eternally active. Its activities in the spiritual kingdom are the most confidential part of spiritual knowledge. These activities of the spirit soul are therefore indicated here as constituting the king of all knowledge, the most confidential part of all knowledge. So, Krishna says, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatiti siddhaye yatitam api siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvata. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So there are different levels of philosophers and practitioners of spiritual knowledge. And they attain different destinations. This, of course, those who are enamored by the material world are constantly disappointed because the spirit is sarvagataha, Krishna says in the second chapter, which means it can go anywhere. It can, and we've been everywhere, actually, through transmigration. We've been in the air, we've been in the water, we've been in space. The soul can exist anywhere, because it's eternal. And it can be accommodated in any mixture of matter, subtle or gross. So we've been in all these different types of media in the material world are mixed up in that. And there's no resting place for the soul, and there's no happiness in matter for the soul. So some philosophers come to this idea of Brahman happiness. And this relieves one of the stress and anxiety of the material world. Really, it's like being chased. I mean, it's literally, it's like being chased, being in the material world. You're always on the run. Like nowadays, I was at the doctor's office and I was waiting at the window and I looked, there was a magazine there and it had a picture of a baby. And the baby had this gigantic, one of those balls that they put on the foot of a prisoner. You know, they don't do it anymore, probably, at least not in America. Well, maybe they do it in America and not anywhere else. But they used to put a, well, they call it a ball and a chain. You've heard of that before, right? Ball and chain. So they have a chain and then a big ball. So that there was a picture of a baby, not a real baby, a drawing of a baby, and had this gigantic ball about the size of the world. And then it was talking about America's debt. Like it's the biggest debt in history that anyone, it's trillions and trillions of dollars. And everyone here, you know, responsible adults, well, Jyoti, cover your ears. There's a thing called credit cards. And, you know, anyone who's bought anything on credit knows that you have to pay interest on it. And if you get a lot of debt like that, the interest can be the main part of the payment. Like when you buy a house and the mortgage, you know, there's a lot of different, well, there were a lot of different creative kinds of loans people could take. And that's what caused a lot of the collapse recently. People bought these loans, interest only, paying off. The material world's like that. We get this kind of debt. And when you don't pay your debt, what happens? Have you ever seen it? It's really an uncomfortable situation. What happens in modern society? You've seen this before?
I haven't, yeah.
You have?
Well,
you've seen it?
When you don't pay a debt?
Yeah, when you don't pay a debt. They write you a letter, and it's got parts of it on the letter will be in red, you know, so you really pay attention. Those are the parts where they're threatening you, you know. That you're probably going to go to jail and take you to court and all this kind of stuff. You'll lose your credit. And so they'll write you a few letters one after another and then creditors start calling. I've seen people who went into debt and they have to change their phone number. Of course, it's hard for them to do that because then they don't have credit to do that. But they get harassed. And so this is the material world. It's like this. We get in debt in the material world, life after life after life, and it builds up like this huge debt with huge interest to pay off. So the Brahman happiness, it's not moving, but there's a huge relief. There's a little feeling of ananda. There's some ananda in the material world, but it's mixed up sand in the sweet rice, and it's not enough. And then the Brahman happiness, there's some ananda, but it's more like relief. But what's being talked about here in this most confidential knowledge probably is mentioning that the soul is active and has to move. So just being inactive is not enough. It's like if somebody's chasing you and you run in a doorway and slam the door and, you know, you're hiding in there and the guy runs by. You know, you're temporarily relieved, but you have to come back out again. So real happiness means to engage in the spiritual activities of the dancing and singing and the joy of the spiritual world, which is going on when the soul is actually active and engaged in Krishna service. It's all happiness. That was the essence of the song we just sang, where Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are embracing, everyone's crying and dancing, and this is positive spiritual activity. And this is the most confidential knowledge that this is the highest level of actual happiness in spiritual life. It's this kind of active engagement, joyful engagement. This knowledge is the purest form of all activities, as explained in Vedic literature. In the Padma Purana, Man's sinful activities have been analyzed and are shown to be the results of sin after sin. Those who are engaged in fruitive activities are entangled in different stages and forms of sinful reactions. For instance, when the seed of a particular tree is sown, the tree does not appear immediately to grow. It takes some time. It is first a small sprouting plant, then it assumes the form of a tree, then it flowers and bears fruits, and when it is complete, the flowers and fruits are enjoyed by persons who have sown the tree, the seed of the tree. Similarly, a man performs a sinful act, and like a seed, it takes time to fructify. There are different stages. The sinful action may have already stopped within the individual, but the results or the fruit of that sinful action are still to be enjoyed. There are sins which are still in the form of seed, and there are others which are already fructified and are giving us fruit, which we are enjoying as distress and pain. As explained in the 28th verse, of the 7th chapter, a person who has completely ended the reactions of all sinful activities and who is fully engaged in pious activities, being freed from the duality of this material world, becomes engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. In other words, those who are actually engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord are already freed from all reactions. This statement is confirmed in the Padma Purana. Aparabdha palam papam kutam bijam phalon mukam. Kramenaiva praliyeta vishnu pakti ratat manam. For those who are engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all sinful reactions, whether fructified in the stalk or in the form of seed, gradually vanish. Therefore, the purifying potency of devotional service is very strong, and it is called pavitram uttamam, the purest. Uttama means transcendental. Tamas means this material world or darkness, and uttama means that which is transcendental to material activities. Devotional activities are never to be considered material, although sometimes it appears that devotees are engaged just like ordinary men. One who can see and is familiar with devotional service will know that they are not material activities. They are all spiritual and devotional, uncontaminated by the modes of material nature. Any questions or comments so far? Continuing, it is said that the execution of devotional service is so perfect that one can perceive the results directly. This direct result is actually perceived, and we have practical experience that any person who is chanting the holy names of Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, in course of chanting without offenses, feels some transcendental pleasure and very quickly becomes purified of all material contamination. This is actually seen. Furthermore, if one engages not only in hearing, but in trying to broadcast the message of devotional activities as well, or if he engages himself in helping the missionary activities of Krishna consciousness, he gradually feels spiritual progress. In Los Angeles, where the temple used to be, Hare Krishna, the temple used to be... Well, next to the temple in Los Angeles, there was a karate studio. And when they do karate, or at least in this particular branch of karate, every time they kick or they throw their arm out, they scream at the top of their lungs. And you can hear on the old tapes, it's right next to the temple on Watseka. And when Prabhupada's giving class or speaking to devotees, you know, in a darshan, you hear these noises in the back. Bah! You know? But he just tolerated and went through. And in New York City, when he first started speaking on 26th Second Avenue, you know, there's all kinds of noises outside. One notable thing was one day, you can hear it in one of his classes in 1966 in 26th Second Avenue, and an ice cream truck went by. You know what that sounds like here in America, right? It plays this kind of, you know, fairy music, like, you know, you hear the... So... apparently, the devotees got a little distracted because, you know, from the time you're a kid, when you hear that sound, you go like, Mommy, ice cream, you know. And so Prabhupada noticed that everyone's distracted, and he goes, what is that noise? And they said, Prabhupada, it's the ice cream truck. And Prabhupada said, this is Maya. Don't eat ice cream, you know. It's like that sound, you know, it's like you got to have it, and you know, attraction. So... these sounds are all pervading in the material world these days. So many machines. in the Vedanta Sutra 3.2.26, this is also described in the following words. Prakashas cha karman abhyasat. Devotional service is so potent that simply by engaging the activities of devotional service, one becomes enlightened without a doubt. We're on page 400, second paragraph down in the middle. A practical example of this can be seen in the life of Narada, who, in that life, happened to be the son of a maidservant. He had no education, nor was he born in a high family, but when his mother was engaged in serving great devotees, Narada also became engaged. And sometimes, in the absence of his mother, he would serve the great devotees himself. Narada personally says, Uchishta lepan anumodito dvijai, sakritsma punje tadapasta kilbisha, evam pravritasya vashudha chetasas, tadharma evat maruchi prajayate. In this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada describes his previous life to his disciple Vyasadeva. He says that while engaged as a boy servant for those purified devotees during the 4 months of their stay, he was intimately associating with them. Sometimes those sages left remnants of food on their dishes, and the boy who had washed their dishes wanted to taste the remnants. So he asked the great devotees for their permission, and when they gave it, Narada ate those remnants and consequently became free from all sinful reactions. As he went on eating, he gradually became as pure-hearted as the sages. The great devotees relished the taste of unceasing devotional service to the Lord by hearing and chanting, and Narada gradually developed the same taste. Narada says further, Tatranvaham Krishna Kata Pragayatam Anugrahena Srinavam Manohara Tashradayame Nupadam Vrishinvataha Prayashamasyanga Mahadbhavad Ruchihi. By associating with the sages, Narada got the taste for hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. And he developed a great desire for devotional service. Therefore, as described in the Vedanta Sutra, prakashascha karman abhyasat. If one is engaged simply in the acts of devotional service, everything is revealed to him automatically and he can understand. This is called pratyaksha, directly perceived. Isn't that amazing? That, you know, there's this personal transference of bhakti from devotees. And this idea of being in the association of devotees, taking the remnants of their food, I mean, how does that work? Taking the remnants of the food, it's practically intangible. It's an uncanny kind of idea how, just by association with somebody else, you take on their qualities. But this is a fact. Krishna consciousness is the science of association. Even in the material world, I remember hearing this formula on some self-help seminar or something. They said, you can judge somebody's income by taking their 5 best friends and finding how much money they make. And then they have some average formula, and they'll say, that's how much you're going to make too, and that's how much you're making. Because of your association, that's who you become. In Krishna consciousness, this holds true also. By our association, we become advanced or affected in an adverse way because of the association of certain persons. We know in Ram Lila that when Ramachandra's mother was happy that Ram was going to be anointed and made king, then the very evil maidservant came and whispered in her ear, you know, you're going to let this happen? She said, well, it's a wonderful event. And as she kept speaking in her ear, she convinced her by her association that it was a bad idea. And that, you know, she planted the seed of envy in her heart and it grew. And then she stopped the whole thing and banished Ram to the forest. So association has great, great consequences. Who you hear from, what their motive is when they speak, is very important. So when Lord Chaitanya was asked, what is the definition of Krishna consciousness? He said, asat sangatyag, a Vaishnavachar. He said, a Vaishnav is somebody who avoids asat sangha, or association with people who are not truthful, or who are attracted and think that the material world, that there's, it's an optimistic idea to try to stay here. You know, someone has that feeling, rather than the idea, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Param Sada Pashanti Suryaho Divava Chakshara Tatam Tabipraso Vipanyavo Jagravam Saha Samindate Vishnurya Paramam Param. Rig Veda says, the devotees, the sat, the truthful people, their goal is towards Lord Vishnu's lotus feet. They may be walking in this world, but their goal is going back home, back to God. And everything they do and everything they speak is like that. But if you associate with somebody who thinks that staying in this material world is a better idea, that's a little much, you know. Take a little of this with that. Stay in the material world, be happy. You become affected. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya. The cause of our different situations in life is purely because of our association, says Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Sarasad yoni janmasu. We get good and bad because of our sangha with the modes. And living beings, all kinds of living beings, Krishna says in the Gita, they're affected by different kinds of modes. But there are some, the great souls, who are not affected by the modes. And by associating with those whose heart is free from this influence of the modes of material nature, then one also becomes free from the influence of the modes of material nature, just by association. That's what's being pointed out here. And you can feel it for yourself, pratyaksha. It's directly perceived, and it happens practically without even noticing. If you put yourself in association with advanced devotees, you get this, just like Narada Muni got, just by being there. 5-year-old boy took the remnants of food. He was intimately associating, and he had appreciation for them, and he was taking in their association. Because of that, he became advanced in devotional service. Very advanced in devotional service. Point?
Can it also be said that when one is in devotional service, one is also under the influence of the internal potency of the Lord? So there was a point made earlier that these are not material activities. You are free from the modes of material nature, in the earlier paragraph that was there. Why so? Well, it's also been said, I don't know which verse to cite, but that when one is in devotional service, one is in the internal potency of the Lord. So living entities, when they are under the influence of material nature, like the modes of material nature, they are under the influence of the marginal energy that is pervading, and being conditioned souls, they have come into contact with it, they are under that influence. But being in devotional service now, when they come under the internal potency of the Lord, then that internal potency must have some influence on the living entity to give them the satisfaction that they talk about, which comes from devotional service, and to give them the advancement it talks about, and also this knowledge that they are getting. It says it's automatically revealed to them. The transference of knowledge, one would think, must also occur under the influence of internal potency. Just a point.
Nice point. Thank you. Yes, Bhagavad Gita. Satatam kirtayantamam yatantash chadridavata namaschantastumam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate mahatmanastumam partha daivim prakritim ashrita bhajantyananyamanaso gyatva bhutitnamabhiyam. Krishna says that he describes the devotees, they're always chanting his glories, engaged in devotional service, and the mahatma is one who is taking shelter of the internal potency. This is called a Hladini Shakti. So, as you pointed out, there are different energies, and the soul is marginal. That means that you can go anywhere according to your association. You're neither here nor there. You become what you associate with. When I associate with matter, I become matter practically. I'm not matter. I'm spirit soul. Jatasya hi dravo mrityo juvan janma mrtasya cha. Krishna says, you know, there's no death, birth or death for the soul. But because of my association with matter, I think I'm the body. I think I'm going to die. This is the pervading mentality in the material world. For a soul that never dies, that's quite an astounding thing, to think I'm going to die and be afraid of death. So that's by association. And similarly, by association with those who are in the internal potency, they're directed by the internal potency. How does one become directed by the internal potency? What is the process? According to Shastra. Associating with devotees? And but, I mean, any more details about it?
Surrendering?
So what is more about details?
Well, the internal potency of the Lord, it is said that by this potency, all his planetary expansions exist, Narayan and everybody else. And it is a energy level that is transcendental. The practices that are there in the spiritual world, which are chanting, dancing, and serving the Lord, are happening in the realm of internal potency. So all the qualities that are there, the spiritual qualities of internal potency, one becomes possessed or endowed with them. And it's
how?
Like... because...
No, I mean, how does the one connect
so,
with that?
So through the exchange, the relationship that is there, the soul is relating to the Lord in devotional
how
service.
How does he relate to the Lord in devotional service?
He's relating...
According to the nectar of instruction that you're all studying. Huh? How does he serve? These are all general things. Give me more specific.
He's chanting his name.
Huh? Hearing, chanting. Okay. What else? Nectar of instruction. Favorable devotional service. So what does that mean? What are some aspects of, like, how one actually associates? You heard some details just last Sunday from Srivas Pandit. Huh? Someone said that, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. Okay?
Yeah, Harinam is spiritual. So if you are associating, you are literally associating with the sound vibration with the Lord.
And where does that come from, the sound vibration?
You speak from your tongue.
You speak, but where did you hear it from in the first place?
From
the first
Guru.
Guru. Yeah. So there's a way of connecting to Krishna through the voice. This is spoken about in the beginning of the Nectar of Instruction. So there's a process. Krishna has Guru Sadhu Shastra. Okay. And there's very important here mention how Narada Muni connected to Krishna. He became purified by association with devotees. This is one of the things that Srivas Pandit brought up about the Nectar of Instruction. Is in the very beginning, it talks about sense control, and then it tells six things that you should avoid and six things that you should engage in. Then what does he talk about? He talks about loving exchanges between devotees. Personal, it's very personal. There's, we know, didati pratigurnati, guhyamakati prachiti. We're just thinking about this because this whole exercise we've all recently been going through with kitchen standards, this kitchen certifications course, KCC. It's taken a lot of thought and effort, and there's been some trepidation about it because, you know, we're in a community, and like when you bring in, you know, we're a free community, we come together voluntarily, and then all of a sudden we say, here's some standards, you know. I was like, what are you talking about, standards? So then there's a whole process, like how does that help us? And then, you know, how do we enact those standards and what does it all mean? And then we start talking about it and, you know, we relate to each other and we discuss, you know, how it works, why we're doing it. And without that, you just get rules and regulations. And that's one of the things that Rupa Goswami mentions, Niyamagraha. He says that there's standards and rules and regulations for following devotional service. And if you just follow them without knowing what you're doing, then it's a cause for fall down, actually. Why? Why if you just follow rules and regulations and you have no idea why you're doing it, is it a cause for fall down? That's what Rupa Goswami says. Atyahara prayashascha prajalpo niyamagraha janashangascha loyamcha shadbir bhakti vinashyati. Your bhakti is finished because, and now let's look at this one word, niyamagraha. there's niyamagraha and niyamagraha. So if you follow the rules and the regulations very strictly, but you have no idea why you're doing it, why is that ruin your bhakti? Come on now. Give me your realization. Take a microphone. We'd like to broadcast this.
Because if you just follow rules and regulations without understanding it, that means that you have not understand the connection with Krishna, like how those rules and regulations are connected with the pure devotional service with Krishna. So that's
that makes a lot of sense. You don't see the connection to Krishna? Thank you. What else?
Castle of cards, and moment disturbance comes, everything shatters right away.
Okay, and you were going to say, Sukeshwar?
I was thinking that if we didn't understand the real meaning of why we are doing something, then it would not last for long.
Won't last for long? And Ramananda Sakya Prabhu is going to weigh in?
If we are doing something without knowing why we are doing, eventually it may become a disturbance to ourselves as well as to the society.
And why is it, I mean, have you done it before? Have you felt what it's like, why you can't continue it? Give me the psychology behind it.
From my personal experience, I felt that if I don't know why I was doing some things, then if I don't know the ultimate goal, then that means I was doing it to satisfy my own self. Mm-hmm. Or it was due to like a lot of arrogance and, you know, like I can do it and I'm doing it. And it's like then it builds onto your ego that, okay, I'm beating the rules, I'm strict and all. And
that kind of connects to what Hero was saying, you know, because you don't know what the ultimate goal of it is, you're not doing it to please Krishna, then maybe you're doing it out of a sense of just for yourself or false ego, and then you don't get a taste, and then you stop doing it, Ramananda?
Another reason is if you are habituated to do something devotional service daily, and if something of higher nature comes, we may think that, oh, this is the one that we are doing daily, oh, we have to do that because I'm supposed to do that daily, without actually prioritizing what is actually better for Krishna in that situation.
That can happen. There's in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, the statement is there, if you're sitting doing deity worship, and the spiritual master comes in, or the, you know, a great elevated person, a sadhu comes in, you can stop the deity worship, stop worshiping Krishna, go greet the sadhu, give him a seat. This is the regulation. But if you're into following the rules and regulations and think, well, Krishna's here, I'll just keep worshiping you, ignore, then this can be a problem, right? Just you're just stuck in one mode. You don't understand the purpose behind it. Okay, so this is on one side. If you follow rules and regulations, but you don't understand why you're doing them, that can also include, you know, reciting prayers and you have no idea what they mean. This can happen. A devotee's, maybe I'll come to a ceremony and I'll do something over and over again. Oh, Charya.
No, I wanted to tell my doubts about this because, with all due respect, but do we really know? It's about the goal. I understand that this is about the goal. So if you're doing something without understanding what is the goal, but do we really understand it? Because it's until we don't have a real deep realization, it's just words. Although it's spiritual words, it gives us some tests. But
well, in the example I was just about to give, we'll go nicely with the answer. And that is, for instance, say if you come and recite prayers, like in ISKCON, we say the Gurvashtakam prayers when we're performing Mangal Artik. And say you learn the prayers by hearing them and then you don't know what they mean, so you just say them. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasadam room. I mean, you don't know, you know, exactly what you're saying, you just repeat something. And after some time, well, there may be some enchantment to just the music or something like that, but if you go into the meanings of it and you think about what it means, in other words, if you just did a simple exercise and you learned what each word meant in one verse, then you sang it, then you have some knowledge. And that's not hard to do. In any of the spheres, of devotional service where we're practicing, if we understand why we're doing it and what the meaning behind it is, it becomes much more enriching. And our mind goes there, and we're fixed on the goal also, why we're doing it. We're serving Krishna. Tachchadadhana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya pashyantya atmani chatmanam bhakta shruta grihitaya. The bhakta who's got some knowledge and some renunciation to back up his devotional service can move more steadily in the process. And yes?
I'm sorry. For example, I'm holding this goal in my head that I have to go to, like, this is my goal of my life, to go to spiritual world. And then I'm having these pictures about spiritual world, which practically, if I would, we can collect all this description of spiritual world from different sources, and then we can really have this picture, either on like a painting, or we can actually make a movie about spiritual world. You know, like Hollywood can make really such nice movie about spiritual world. Will it help?
Yes, because it's pratyaksha. And that's the point here. It's pratyakshavagamam dharmyam. The reason it's the perfection of religion is because it's absolute. Like you mentioned, pictures of Krishna. When I was in Japan last time, a devotee told me the story of how she came to Krishna consciousness, Tapasvini. And she had been in a business working with a devotee. He was a devotee, but he had gone away from devotional service. And he was living in Japan, trying to like get away from Krishna. And he was doing some business, and part of the business meant recruiting other people and getting them into the business, something like Amway or something. And so he one day when he went to her house for a meeting, he had this roll of a painting, a poster, and he accidentally left it at her house. And so she called him a couple times and said, "You left this roll at my house, you know, last time." He said, "Oh," and he kept forgetting. So out of curiosity one day, because he didn't come pick it up, she pulled it out. And inside there was a picture of Gopal. You know the one where he's sitting with the little deer? Oh. You know, very beautiful picture. And she had no idea who that was. You know, she's from Japan. She never heard of Krishna. But she looked at the picture, and immediately she thought it was a girl. And then she thought, but if there was ever a picture, this came into her mind, if there was ever a picture of God, this is probably it. You know, this is like the divine. In Japan, Kami-sama, that's the name for God, Kami-sama. So this is, she thought, this is Kami-sama. If anything was, this was probably it, having no knowledge of what it was. So she kept sneaking looks at it, and then because he didn't pick it up, she put it on the wall. And at that time, she was a smoker. She used to smoke in the house. And then one day she was smoking, and the picture was there. And she started having this uneasy feeling that she shouldn't smoke in front of the picture, because she thought, you know, this is maybe God, and it's a beautiful picture. And she started developing this relationship with the picture. And so then she said she'd go in the bathroom and open the window, and she'd smoke, and you know how smokers do, blow the smoke out the window. And so that the smoke wouldn't come in and bother Kami-sama in there. And so more and more, when she'd come home, she'd start thinking about the picture as she was coming home to see the picture, and she started sort of offering respects and things like that, not knowing. And then soon afterwards, she met some devotees on the street, and they were showing books and everything like that, and they gave her this card and said, "Come, you know, come and have a free vegetarian meal. We have a Sunday feast," and things like that. So she went to the temple, and she went there, and the same picture was there. And she was astounded, and she said, "Who is that?" And they said, "Oh, that's Krishna." So she became so excited. She knew who Krishna was now, and she knew the picture, and the connection all came to her like a lightning bolt. And so she went home, and she called her devotee friend. Now, remember, I'm telling you, he had been a devotee, and he, of course he is now too, but he had fallen away from devotional service and was trying to sort of not be involved, like stay away, because sometimes this happens. Devotees get involved and they think, "I want to forget Krishna at all costs. I'll do whatever I can to forget." So they go away and they try to hide from Krishna and absorb themselves some other way. So she called him up and left a message on his answering machine, said, "That poster you left over here, I figured out who it was." It's Krishna, you know? And so he called back and he left a message on her machine and he said, roll up the poster, put it away, and walk away as fast as you can. Because your life will never be the same. And that same admonition is there from Rupa Goswami. He puts in the Nectar of Devotion that the devotees are saying, don't go to Keshi Ghat. Because if you go to Keshi Ghat and you see Krishna there playing his flute and his threefold bending form, you're finished. You'll never be able to stay at home peacefully anymore. Whenever you're just going to be thinking about running away. And so it's absolute. And we see this. This is the power of devotional service. The picture may be there, but it's Krishna. It's absolute. He's actually there in his name and his form. And this is what it means in this verse, pratyaksha. It's directly perceived. You know, there is a relationship you have with Krishna, and he can manifest in all these different ways for the devotees. So if we enter into the science and we know about it, and we perform the regulations for Krishna's pleasure, and that's why we're doing it. We'll do it correctly. We'll know when to bend the regulation and when to move it in the proper way so that we please Krishna. So you don't use rules and regulations to hide or for the sake of doing them. You also don't do it so that you can be right and everybody else can be wrong. You can also do that. And then you can make offenses to devotees. Because you know how to do the rule and nobody else does. And then what are you now? You're puffed up and you'll fall down. So Niyamagraha, it's a fine line you have to walk. And you have to know what the rules and regulations are for. And you also have to know when to perform them. And that requires some maturity. And that's why it's one of the reasons it's very important to be in the association of mature devotees who have been through a lot, so you can take help. You can take some shiksha, some guidance. You know, is this one of the times? Should I go this way or that way? You know, if I go this way, I'm going to be in trouble. If I go that way, okay, then, you know, the person tells you, let me tell you, it happened to me, go down the middle. Here's where you go. Walk this way, step there, and then you're safe. You know how to follow the rules and regulations properly. And guaranteed, most of the decisions you have to make in your life are not going to be easy. Just take a look at it. You know, there's so many decisions you have to make, and every time, it's not going to be black and white. It's not obvious. You'll have to use your maturity, your intelligence. You have to take shastra, sadhu, guru, all those things, and then move properly to know how to do it. Very important. Hero.
Speaking about... Prabhuji, speaking about rules and regulation and association with devotees... I was wondering that how about if we want to influence some person who is indulged into materialistic world? I mean, I sometimes think that we devotees are strong enough that we should not be get influenced by them, and we should influence them with our devotional service. Like, the one of the rules is that we should only associate with devotees. But then when you said that we should think maturely and we should know how we can bend the rules. Can we, like, I was just wondering that if we want to, if we consider some person in a material world who is dear to us, and if we want to influence his life by devotional service, mm-hmm. Can we do that?
You can do it if you're strong. I mean, you know, like doctors who go into an area that's known to have an epidemic, what do they do? Leprosy, tuberculosis, that's airborne, right? Tuberculosis, you can get it, somebody coughs on you or something, it goes in the air. So, you know, you're really careful. First of all, you make sure you're fortified yourself before you go in there, and you take great precautions. And most people who do life-saving, they go in pairs. You'll notice policemen, they travel in pairs. And lifesavers, you know, paramedics, they go twos. Firemen, they go in twos. Devotees, Haridas Thakur, Advaita Acharya, they go in twos. You know, you've got to be careful. It's happened more times than I care to think about. Devotees thinking that, you know, I'm going to go save somebody and then, like, hey, where'd they go? You know, they got reabsorbed back into the thing. It's like, if you're not strong enough and you go somewhere, you don't underestimate Maya because she's very tricky. Yeah. You
know? So in other words, we have to be vaccinated ourselves first before we say...
Yeah, you have to be vaccinated. And always be vigilant because Maya's very tricky. You know, Maya's thing is like, oh, you're okay now. You know, you can be... That one doesn't matter. Everything matters. One discipline affects everything else. Every little thing you let down on, that affects all the other disciplines in your life. It's a state of consciousness. And if you stay strict, especially like Satyadeva Prabhu's Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Prabhupada was so nice. He was talking about stay with the regulative principles in 16 rounds. He was talking about, you know, if you follow the four regulative principles very carefully, and they're very important, and you chant 16 rounds, it'll give you a basis, a very strong basis. Once Prabhupada said, if you do that, your devotional life will be as strong as the Himalaya mountains. It seems like a simple thing, right? It's like, four regular principles, 16 rounds, big deal. It's a huge deal. It gives you the basis in Krishna consciousness. So you have to have those things to fortify you and be very, very careful. Because as soon as we start associating, then, you know, things... We can come into difficulty. Okay, so it's 8:30, and I've taken liberty of an extra half hour of your lives. I'm very sorry. But we'll move on now to our next activity of artik and kirtan. So let's put all the books away as efficiently and quickly as possible, and then we'll have artik and prasadam. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Gopakta Vrinda ki jai, Gopremanande Haribol.